You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready. This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to a long-awaited episode of Superhuman Radio. We've missed the last two installments of the roundtable discussion on strength and hypertrophy with Coach Wade Johnson and Rob Regish. We're going to be doing that. And then during the second hour, in true form, we will have Adele Musa all the way from Munster, Germany, to perform the Subversity Science Roundup. So you're not going to want to miss that. Today is a jam-packed show as I welcome my two long-lost guests back. How you doing, Wade?
Great to be with you guys, always.
And, of course, Rob Regish bringing up, representing the state of Massachusetts.
yeah. tough folks in Boston.
That's right, baby. Well, you blow their legs off, they get right back up again, man.
That's right. Do you see that 78-year-old runner who got blown down?
God bless him. Yeah,
man. Let me tell you, you want to know how Americans handle terror? That man got up and finished the race, brother.
The guy who helped him up, he said to him, I got to get to the finish line. And the guy walked with him to the finish line because it was just another 50 feet away. It was like, you think he could have said, nah, I'm done. I got here. He was like, no, I got to get under the finish line before I can walk away from these bombs.
Yep.
Man, they don't build them like that, cuz.
No. Right. That's right, brother. That should tell the whole story to whoever perpetrated that atrocity.
Yeah, absolutely. On a lighter note, let's discuss what we're going to be discussing today. We're going to change things up a little bit. We usually talk about training, modalities, exercises, rehabbing. We're going to talk about nutrition today, more specifically, the type of nutrition that is required for building both power, strength, and hypertrophy, which both of you know equally as much about, obviously. And so this is obviously not going to be the American Dietetic Association approach to eating. And we obviously cannot be carb phobic. We may or may not be paleo. So don't, for those of you out there going, but Carl, you say blah, blah, blah. Look, when you're eating for a specific reason, sometimes you have to eat differently. So, you know, and I know that Coach Johnson feels that the most anabolic food on the planet is pizza.
Yeah, that's always been a staple for me. Absolutely.
Yeah. So absolutely. I mean, let's get to this question first, and I want both of you to weigh in on it. I'm going to ask Rob to weigh in first because I think I know what he's going to say, but I could be wrong. Do you think you have to eat differently if hypertrophy and just pure muscle size gains are your goal versus strength and power?
Yeah, I do. I guess I'll split my answer up into you know, two disciplines. One, if you're bodybuilding, I'm of the opinion that abs are built in the kitchen. And I think you know what I mean by that. But sure. if you're training for brute size and strength and you're talking about diet, then you're really talking about two things. One, eating enough to fuel, you know, intense sessions where you're focusing on overloading the muscle, and then secondly, eating enough above and beyond caloric maintenance to provide the caloric cement necessary to build new muscle tissue. So I think that's where you need to start and say, okay, you know, which one of these two are my goals, and then we can talk about how best to go about it.
Okay, so what do you think, Coach Johnson? Do you eat differently if you, because you were a bodybuilder early on, you eat differently if you're looking to have an aesthetically pleasing body with big bulging muscles, or if you're trying to train for strength and power?
I think it's definitely two disciplines. I think one of the things we have to be cautious of, you know, when I look back, you know, from, you know, being, now I'm 60 pounds lighter from, you know, my heaviest. You know, it's one of those things where I wonder, you know, could I have done things a little differently? But my experience is I knew going into this to be as, to move a certain amount of weight, by and large, there's exceptions to every rule seemingly, but I knew that there was going to have to be a certain amount of weight, a certain amount of body mass, you know, to make that happen. And I've said this over and over, and I heard this from Jamie Harris the first time. You know, I weighed 365 pounds, and I didn't get that way by drinking spring water and eating skinless chicken and water chestnuts. And, you know, and there's no way on the planet that you're going to be able to take in that much food, you know, to, again, anabolics aside, and I was drug free. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you can drink that gallon of milk, you can take drugs, but, and all that stuff, but it requires an inordinate amount of food and training, you know, to maintain that size and to put on that kind of a size and strength. Whereas a bodybuilder, you know, which to me is a much more difficult discipline, is eating in the manner in which Rob said, you know, to fuel and the cement that holds it all together and to recover, you know, but you have to do it in a manner, you know, you're not going to put on 30 pounds of weight and 15 pounds of it be body fat and be a bodybuilder. It's, you know, so it is definitely two different disciplines.
Okay, and I agree with both of you. So the next question becomes this. Obviously, we've preached on this show, on the roundtable discussion, and I've preached independently on Superhuman Radio in general, you have to make a decision of what your endpoint is going to be. If your endpoint is purely strength, or your endpoint is the physical aesthetics of a bodybuilder, you have to make that decision, and then you have to get on that train and stay on that train until you reach the progress point that you're looking for. So with that being said, if my endpoint, if I say, I just want to squat 700 pounds, I just want to pull 700 pounds, do I have to say to myself, and there's gonna be some body fat here. I may not look in the mirror and go, damn, I look good naked, but I will be able to pull 700 pounds at the end of this journey. Is body fat something I have to just get used to and embrace?
I think so to a certain degree. Go ahead, Rob. I'm because you're the smart one here. I'm more interested in what you got to say.
Now, you know, I'll say this, coming from an ectomorphic background, I am absolutely convinced that you need to make hay while the sun is shining, meaning when you're in your prime hormonal years in your youth, you need to overeat and you need to bulk up to, you know, a maximum body weight that you can carry while your heart and lungs are still, you know, can still handle that. Because as you look back, as I look back and step into gyms, you know, everywhere I go, I am so grateful that I did that. Because why? Because I have a central nervous system now that knows how to handle really heavy weights.
Yeah.
And, you know, I made it to 252 drug free, and being able to hold any lesser body weight on X number of calories is a lot easier. So I think in this day and age where everybody wants to be ripped, it's a lot more in fashion now than it was in the 80s. When the goal is to be, you know, as big as you could be, as quick as you could, it's imperative to forego having a year-round six-pack and, you know, put the pedal to the metal, man. See how large and strong you can become and deal with carrying a little extra body fat.
Okay, so Wade, somebody who's taken this journey, do you look back and think, you know, I probably could have gotten this strong without putting on some of this body fat? Or do you think, no, in order for me to have done what I've done, I had to do what I did?
I, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, when I look back now, and, you know, and I'm about 2.5 years removed from my last powerlifting meet, you know, could I have trained a little differently? And you know, I think all that's, you know, it's debatable, arguable, whatever you like. But ultimately, you know, the path that I took was a successful path. So I have to believe, you know, that again, to be in my mid-40s, to be drug-free, I knew it was going to require, based on how I had progressed throughout my career, I knew if I put on a little bit more weight, and I naturally did, as the training poundage just got heavier, at my heaviest, I never changed my eating habits from when I was 25 pounds lighter. You know, but I was also squatting 150 pounds more, and my training weights, you know, a lot of times were more than what my maxes were the two or three previous years. You know, and your body's going to respond to that. And so I think that the best lesson, if someone is starting out and you know, they're lifting and they've had some success and they want to take this to a new level, I always tell them accept the physique that the training gives them. For strength, it's not, you're not training, you know, there's certain things that I just simply don't do, you know, because my focus has always been strength and performance in some type of strength sport, especially and primarily powerlifting. Now, probably what I could have done in my zeal to get big and strong, I probably could have eaten cleaner more frequently, but by the same token, again, I've said this on the show before, and I use this analogy all the time. Look at nature. Nature's always going to tell us the truth. You know, look at the elephant, you know, biggest, most powerful land animal. Look at a silverback gorilla and how many vascular, ab-ridden, you know,
gorillas do you have to shave them?
Gorillas, yeah, do right. You see, you know, and the answer is they do not exist in nature. I'm not saying that that is a free pass to be a big fat.
No, I agree. I agree.
That's not it. Well, but I think you're going to, when you look at the, especially, you know, even the, there's the guy.
Marius Pudanowski.
Yeah,
comes in, right?
That is an exception. Right. By and large, they do not look like Marius. And, you know, and they're going to look more like, you know, Zadrunas.
I mean,
that's just, you know, the big, powerful guy. You know, I think you're seeing it, as Rob said, where, you know, now everybody's this little lithe, skinny, you know, ripped guy, you know, but you're seeing where lifters are leaner now, but ultimately, you know, there's a build that comes along. I have people, we did an event where I work, it's been about a week or so ago, and I'm standing in golf shorts and a golf shirt, and never laid eyes on this guy. He was one of the police officers doing security, and he looked over at his two buddies, and he goes, "You can tell by how he looks that that guy is a power lifter." You know?
Right.
And it's just, so that's why I've always said, understand what you are, and accept the physique, you know, that the training gives you. Because if I was going to worry about a six pack and, you know, having super wide lats and narrow hips, then I could kiss, you know, a 1,000-pound squat, you know, goodbye. It
right.
just wasn't going to happen. Right. And the body fat also helped protect. I mean, one of the things that I can tell, and I'd be interested in input from other people that have lost a significant amount of weight as a strength athlete, all that body fat allowed, it protected me. I mean, now that I'm 60 pounds lighter, the leverage changes and just simply how everything feels. Like Rob said, my central nervous system, you know, I stood up with 735 pounds a couple of weeks ago in the squat and completely comfortable. You know, it was only until I got in the hole that I was like, man, this is a lot heavier than it used to be. And, you know, so I think that's the thing. It's a significant difference in when you're looking at an aesthetic muscle versus, you know, a muscle that is meant to be big and powerful and strong. That's not to say, you know, an aesthetically pleasing, you know, bodybuilder guy is not strong, but by and large, you know, I would venture to say 90% of the time, you know, the bigger, you know, built for power guy is going to be much stronger than a very lean, even large bodybuilder.
Okay, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to then take this and roll it into some eating ideology. You know, and I got to be honest, recently I really upped my eating and I put on some body fat, but I got strong really fast in the gym. And is there a middle ground? We're going to kind of try to play around with this and see if there's a middle ground. Is there a happy medium for people who want to get exclusively strong, eat what you want, to be exclusively a bodybuilder, eat very, very rigidly, and someplace in between? You're listening to the Roundtable Discussion on Strength and Hypertrophy with Coach Wade Johnson and Rob Regish, and we'll let them plug their websites when we come back. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Muscle stimulation is state-of-the-art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial-grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200. Including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household. I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy and disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest protein bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Power Block dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com for a free brochure. Calling all men. The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, Stimulant-Free Pre-Workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Coach Johnson, go ahead and plug your websites, please.
You can find me on Facebook. I've got a personal page and a Johnson Strength Group page. You can find our training forum on weightliftingdiscussion.com, and I can be reached via email at supersquat800@yahoo.com.
And then, of course, Rob Regish, you can find them right at Superhuman Radio. If you go there, there's several banner ads, one for the Blueprint Bulletin, which is the continuation of the Blueprint Power Hour, but you receive it in your inbox. Where he addresses training, nutrition, gray market supplements, and so on. You can get a free volume, a free issue of that by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad. Then, of course, his fantastic supplement that continues to receive more and more rave reviews. How's the product doing lately, Rob?
You know, it's incredible. Our European distributor, Predator Nutrition, you're going to find, you can look on any board anywhere, but in particular Predator, in the last week alone, it has won over two skeptics, including a guy who admittedly ordered it just to prove that it wouldn't work for him. And he is one of its biggest, you know, advocates now. So.
And for those who are wondering what we're talking about, it's called Mass Pro Synthogen, which is a really amazing supplement. Okay, so now, Coach Johnson, I affectionately said that one of the most anabolic foods in your heart and mind is pizza. But let's be honest. Pizza is one of those foods that 99% of the population can consume large amounts of, and it's very calorically dense. So when eating for strength, do we look at the approach to eating for strength of, like, just turn the horses loose and let them eat, or do you have to pay more attention to what you're consuming as far as how much protein, how much carbs, and how much fat?
I never did any of the ratio kind of things. It was one of those things where what I have found is I ate things that I knew that I would enjoy eating frequently. I think that's one of the things. It's like a protein supplement, a powder protein, and I'm just going to cut to the chase. If it tastes like ass, you're not going to drink it. I don't care. I'll put it to you this way.
Yeah, you don't care if it shuts down myostatin by 10,000%.
It does not matter if it, you know, it's just one of those things. If it's that laborious to drink down, if you're choking it down and gagging, and there are powders out there like that, you're not going to use it. So it renders it, you know, ineffective. And to the point, you know, I was approached by a company, this is on my way up in the sport, and they sent me, you know, this jug of protein and all this promise of sponsorship. And I tried twice to drink it, and I just gave it away. You know, I just said I'm going to have to, you know, I just couldn't, I wasn't going to support the product if I couldn't, you know, use it, much less deal with it. And so, you know, it's one of those things. You have to find things, one, that you enjoy and find a variety of things that you won't get, you know, burn out too quickly. That seemed to be the biggest secret for me.
So the old mantra that I learned like 10 years ago, in order to get big, you got to eat big. That really, what they're saying is not a 50, 30, 20. You just got to eat more. Eat whatever you can get. Eat it.
Yes, absolutely. You know, that is the biggest, a lot, you know, we're in the day and age of, you know, where it's this instant thing, and it's just not instant. And what you have to understand is that, you know, when I consult with people, or I've even had some of the guys that are slow gainers, so to speak, you know, it's 24/7. You have to, if you want to put on size beyond where you are, that fuel has to come from somewhere. And I don't care how hard you train. The harder you train, you know, the more you gotta put in. And I use this analogy, because I always use analogies. When, you know, look at the steam locomotive or the steamboat. When that engineer wanted that thing to go faster, what did they do?
They shoveled more
coal to the fire.
Right.
The hotter the fire, the more steam, the harder, the stronger, the faster that thing went. And the approach is that simple in nature. You know, and again, this isn't an excuse to go to McDonald's and eat six Big Macs. That's not what I'm
espousing,
you know, prescribing.
Right, right.
What I am saying, though, is if you want that motor to run, and you want it to run in a certain manner, you're going to have to fuel it accordingly. And how you're eating currently, if you're 175 pounds and you're 6 feet tall and you want to be a strength athlete, you better start sucking that food down like it's going out of style. And that's, you know, when I did my first meet, I weighed 257 pounds, I believe. And then when my career ended, you know, at the height of my career, so, you know, I'm still competing and everything.
Right.
But
the pinnacle of your career, how much did you weigh?
365 pounds.
Yeah. That's, you know, 110 pounds you put on,
right,
over that period of time.
Right. And,
you think, you know, I wonder, you know, I just had a thought. If we could have skinned you like a cat, I wonder what you would have been. I bet you probably would have been 275 pounds, 285 pounds of just muscle and bone, I bet.
Oh, the amount, you know, you know, I'm not going to pretend. I mean, you saw me at my biggest.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know,
you really
I,
did.
I,
you know
I
what?
Had...
I got to tell you something. When you came out with Ogaware, I remember thinking, he's spot on with this, because you were wide, you were thick, you were just, you know, and you're not an exceptionally tall guy, but you didn't, the irony was you were so massive, you didn't look tall anymore. Does that make sense to you?
Right. Oh, that's, people like, I remember Ken Anderson, and I wish I could quote him, but I cannot for the sake of the show. He was at a meet where there was several of the big name West Side lifters, and I had gone to speak to Louis, and we were standing there. When I got back down and sat down next to him, he said, "That is absolutely incredible." Of course, he is using colorful
right.
metaphors to be descriptive,
right.
as Ken can do. And I was like, "What?" He goes, "You know, I've been around these guys for a long time, and they are huge people, but you make them look small." He said, "I didn't know until you were standing next to Louis," and Louis is not a tall guy, but a bunch of those guys, "I didn't realize you were even tall."
Yeah, you know, right,
and
exactly.
And it's one of those things that, you know, that even now that I'm 60 pounds lighter, it's one of those things where, you know, I still get called big guy and stuff like that.
Right.
But, I mean, at that size, yeah, definitely. I mean, because I was filling out a 5X T-shirt. I mean, filling it out, and that, not just in the stomach, I mean everywhere.
Yeah, right.
And,
right.
And for me to be that big, you know, it was one of those things, you know, it once 2 hours was up, I was looking for something to eat.
Yeah, your body starts demanding calories. All right, here's what I'm going to do. We're going to take a commercial break 30 seconds early, because when we come back, I'm going to turn the mic over to Rob. Rob, what I want you to think about is this. So given this idea, let's face it, at the core of bodybuilding is still strength and power, because the more weight you can handle, the bigger your muscles can get. So with that being the case, there's two different schools of thought out there now. There's the old school of thought where you spent a period of time every year eating big and recklessly and putting on the weight, and then a period of time stripping it off. And now there's a new mantra out there. Everybody talks about lean gains, putting on the maximum amount of muscle without adding any fat. I want you to come back from the break, and I want you to tell me, is the old school style the best approach if ultimately size is the most important thing, size of muscles, or does the lean gain approach provide some other benefit that we need to be paying attention to? You're listening to the roundtable discussion on strength and hypertrophy with Coach Wade Johnson and Rob Regish. Later in the show, we're joined by the guy who helps always make me look smart by sending me studies while I'm on the air, so that they fuel questions with my guests, and that is the brilliant and talented Adele Musa, all the way from Munster, Germany. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre-, intra-, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrian C. Altrian C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrian delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to AltrianC.com. That's AltrianC.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to AltriantC.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altriant C, 21st century vitamin C. No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechano Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Way Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Way Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Way Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Way Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money.
Have you ever been let down by so-called nitric oxide muscle pump products before? Well, prepare to be shocked. Vengeance is like nothing you've ever tried before. Vengeance leverages several different scientifically proven technologies to deliver what some users say are painfully explosive pumps. If you are satisfied with nitric oxide products that make you wonder if they're working, move on. But if you want a muscle pump that you'll not only feel, but others will see, train with a vengeance. Go to xfmuscle.com today and get vengeance.
Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a one-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding.
Get strong. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
I don't know.
Yeah. Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. You know, I got an email from a fellow named Don Nas not too long ago complaining that some of the advertisers on this show are not in line with the core mission of the show. And so I asked listeners to go ahead and suggest what advertisers should be on the show, and I would pursue them. You know, I got zero, no takers. No one emailed me anything. Per se, I should say, except just now a guy named Richard Patterson, who's an avid listener of the show, sent me a lead on a company that he said would be fitting for the direction of the show, and I thank him for that. And I say to anybody out there who feels that we need different advertisers, send me some advertisers to pursue, and I will contact them and get them on the air. So anyway, okay, with that being said, so Rob, back in the day when you and I first started paying attention, well, you actually earlier than me, the notion was there was a bulking season and then a season where you kind of stripped all the body fat off and showed off all your hard work. And that was the mantra for decades. But then a group came and said, you know, you lose way too much muscle doing it that way. It's much better just to maintain the body fat at low levels and do what is considered lean gains. What are your thoughts on this? Should we just turn the dogs loose and let them eat everything they want for the bulking season and then taper down? Or is there really a net loss as a result of that?
No, I think it is fair to say at this point that we know enough about new ways to manipulate training, diet, and supplementation that there is a better way. And I'll expand on that in a second. The old approach of, you know, eating your lungs out and bulking up into oblivion, you know, I did that for 15 years. It was a 15-year bulking phase. I would tell you that the only people that that approach would suit, in my opinion, and not for very long, are extremely young, ectomorphic, you know, hard gainers that just can't put on size to save their lives. And while we joke about pizza, and other junk foods, the takeaway there really is this. Those foods do help. Why do they help? Because they're calorically dense.
Yeah.
And calories for the ectomorphic skinny hard gainer, calories are your friends. And let's face it, you know, you're not going to, like Wade said, you're not going to get there eating boiled chicken breast, white rice, and some vegetables.
I like, no, water chestnuts. I like that one.
And
I'm going to remember that one.
Actually, Jamie's quote was spring water and skinless chicken.
Yeah, there you
go. I needed to have a little more dramatic effect.
I like that, water chestnuts. That's funny.
Water chestnuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Rob, am I hearing you right? Are you saying that the lean gain approach makes more sense, or do you just go, look, I'm going to put on muscle and fat, And, you know, like the old adage, kill them all and let God sort out the good ones. I'm going to just put on everything I can, and then later on I'm going to strip off the fat.
That's a tempting approach, but here's the problem with that approach. The longer that you overfeed, the more the body changes gears in a bad way. And what I mean by that is when you start to overfeed and you've been underweight or coming off a diet, you'll put on a high percentage of muscle early and very little fat. But as the time duration curve unfolds, the enzymes that store fat become more active, and then all of a sudden you're storing more fat than muscle tissue. So the lean gains approach, whatever you want to call it, is the more intelligent way to go about things. The pickle that comes up is, okay, now we need a way to objectively quantify when enough is enough.
Right, exactly, where you're not getting a lot of waste on your waistline, but you're not starving your body of any essential needed concrete to build muscle.
Right, and I'll offer this rough guideline. You can measure body fat, you know, 8 ways to Sunday. So I'm going to skip that and give you a real easy diagnostic measure. You know, get yourself a tape measure and measure your waist.
Yeah.
You know, when you're bulking and you've put on more than, let's say, an inch and a half on your waist, it's time to cut back.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't have that objective diagnostic, then what's going to happen? You know, you're going to trick yourself into buying bigger clothes every 3 to 6 months and saying, hey, I'm still putting on lean mass and look at the weights are going up. Well, maybe, but, you know, now you've got visceral fat, which is a whole nother issue, but that's the way I do it. I peg it at an inch and a half and say, okay, I've just hit an inch and a half. It's time to dial back.
So, Rob, I'm not trying to plug the blueprint, but is that the basis behind caloric zigzagging so that you take the advantage of that boomerang period where you're more prone to muscle gains but then back off before the enzymes kick in and you're starting to put on more fat?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you why.
Okay, so without giving away the book, and here's another reason why people should reinvest in getting the blueprint, without giving away the book, is there a way to know when that period is changing, or is it like, well, it's 2 weeks, or this is how you tell when you have to zigzag back and cut back on your calories?
Yeah, there absolutely is. And, you know, the caloric zigzags in 3.0 specifically are there such that your body does not flatline and acclimate to any given steady caloric intake. And you can look at this bulking or dieting. You know, when you consistently give your body 3,000 calories a day and you were, you know, previously taking in 4, then at some point in about 3 to 4 weeks, your basal metabolic rate will downshift to match your caloric intake and fat loss will stop. Caloric zigzagging helps you get around that. And yes, there is a very definite time period that applies to a broad cross-section of the training population that we use in Blueprint where we cut it. So Blueprint Shell kind of auto-regulates your physiology such that you get in, you hit hard like any other type of warfare, and you get out. And then we have a period where we cement those gains and repeat, you know, over and over. So you keep gaining without, you know, an ever-ballooning waistline. And it works like a charm.
And it won't hamper strength and it won't hamper muscle gains, but it will hamper the accumulation of additional unnecessary fat.
Yeah, these guys are coming out shining like a diamond. They come out of the chute at the end of the feast phase, not only with lower body fat levels, but new PRs in their one rep max and in their big lifts. So it's possible. It just takes some savvy planning, both with, you know, the training and the diet need to dovetail together. It is not easy. It is not simple. You're not going to smile your way through it, but it can be done, and we figured out how to do it.
Wade, have you ever given thoughts to carbs or, like, you know, like the, well, you know, if you cut back on your carbs, you'll get leaner. Do you lose strength when you start paying attention to carbs if you're a strength athlete whose mission is to just get stronger and stronger?
Not for me. I mean, for me, the amounts of protein that I took in was always increased, and a lot of times – in the fats. You know, I was eating more eggs, and when I was trying to put on weight, like with my protein drink, I would add flax oil, you know, and take extra, you know, EFA type supplements. So, I mean, for me, the carbs were, you know, it wasn't as big a deal. You know, I ate my share. Don't get me wrong, but it was never one of these things where I had this, like, I really got a carb load. I was coming up in a time where, you like the things that Rob are talking about, where we, you know, it was just like, we're going to the pizza buffet, and then in 2 hours I'll take a protein drink, you know, and I'll double the, you know, I'll use two scoops and not one, because an hour and a half after that shake, I got to eat, you know, a steak and a cucumber.
Right.
And, you know, that sort of thing. So for me, it was about how to get the most bang for my buck. And I always felt good. I've talked to you about this before. The week of a meet, I was eating red meat, most of the time steak, at least twice a day the week of a meet. And how that made me feel, you know, that was when I felt full and strong. I never got that from carbs. Now, that may be different from other people, but, you know, I never got it by eating a ton of, you know, especially breads and pastas and stuff like that. It just never did anything for me. But I always felt good eating, you know, a ton of vegetables. So, I think that's one of the reasons why, like you said, when I was at 365, I didn't even look like, you know, because I'm over 6 feet tall. And, you know, I looked like I was 5'10".
Right.
And I think that's what allowed me to be so dense, because I just wasn't this roly-poly, you know, fat guy.
Right.
And
right.
So I think for me that, you know, that's how that worked. Now, I will tell you this. I don't have the scientific aspects of it, as Rob has pointed out, but that's how I've had to do, like Rob is saying, zigzagging. For me, what I've had to do is, like, you know, I've cut my caloric intake. I'm eating cleaner by and large. And as I've gone down, what I would do is I would keep that food where it was. And when I got to, when I, you know, would reach a milestone weight, so to speak, like when I got to 320, I could tell my leverages had changed. And what I would do is, when my strength just plummeted, you know, when I felt like at the low end strength I just had nothing, I'd pick up my eating for a week, maybe 2 weeks. And I might put on 5 pounds, you know, but then I would, you know, then I would clean up my food and you know, it's been like about every 2 months, maybe 2.5 months, I've had to pick up my eating a little bit just to keep from feeling so flat. That's not, I'm not zigzagging as he is, but I'm just giving you an idea of what I've had to do, as my leverages and body weight has changed, you know, to feel like I could train and do so, you know, at a maximum level, because I'm still trying to be as strong as I possibly can. But I do, my carbs are strictly with vegetables, and I moderate them.
All right, look, I think we've covered the topic pretty well. There's lots of disciplines, but the bottom line is this, it sounds like. If you want to get big and strong, you have to eat more. What you eat more of will determine whether or not you put on more body fat, or muscle, or both. And so there has to be some sensibility here. You can't use the excuse to go to the Chinese buffet every day and say, well, I'm a power lifter. Because you still have to get the right types of foods in large quantities. What I want to do is I want to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about you judged a powerlifting competition this past weekend, right, Coach Johnson?
Yeah, it was the SPF Women's Pro Meet in Cincinnati, Ohio, at Shane and Laura Sweat's gym. They have a new aspect of their gym that they've opened recently in the last few months, and it was held there. It is an extraordinary event.
Okay, so let's do this. Let's talk about that. When we come back, also, I want to ask you if you ever saw that picture of that high school kid who benched 700 pounds. Don't answer it yet. And also, did you hear about Tiny Meeker? We're going to talk about some things in powerlifting when we come back. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Roundtable Discussion on Strength and Hypertrophy with Coach Wade Johnson and Rob Regish, the two strong guys. And then there's me, the chick. We'll be right back.
New
from Rob Ragish, author of The Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes the Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplementation, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com today. Wherever you call your battlefield after each training engagement, you must recover. Introducing the most complete all-natural and organic recovery formula, Amnutrition's Basic Training, formulated by a military veteran. Basic Training provides the ammunition your body needs to recover and continue the fight. No fake sugar or flavors, no GMOs, less than 1 milligram of sugar and soy per serving, with complete nutrition no other company provides. Arm yourself with the healthiest recovery formula on the market, the body's ammunition, Amnutrition. Join the nutritional revolution by going to muscleamnutrition.com. That's muscle, AMNUTRITION.com.
Recover!
Amnutrition.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com. And click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a 1-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for, and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
True Protein is now TrueNutrition.com. The company that gave you personalized protein blends has now expanded their offerings to include over 5,000 new products. Whether your interests are health and fitness, sports nutrition and supplements, or fitness gear and accessories, you'll find what you're looking for at TrueNutrition.com. Check out the new vegetarian and vegan product lines as well. Oh, and don't worry, you can still blend your own personal protein supplements with a full range of milk, whey, casein, beef, egg, rice, and soy proteins. Check out TrueNutrition.com today.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. It must be the day of Richards or Ricky's, because Ricky Seda, S-E-D-A, just also sent me a recommendation for an advertiser. Thank you so much to those of you who have heard my request and are responding. Okay. Later in the show, Adele Moussa joins us to do the Subversity Science Roundup. We've got lots of good things to talk about during that segment. So, let's talk about this. You were at a, you were a judge at a powerlifting competition, right, Wade?
Yes. Yes.
So, did you see any real stars there? Did you see anybody that like really jumped out? You're like, man, this person is going somewhere.
I will tell you this, and you've been around me at meets, and a lot of people that know me know that women in powerlifting is something that has always been, I wouldn't say a pet project. It's just one of those causes that I championed, because, and I told the girls this during the rules briefing. You know, our sport used to be on TV, and when I was exposed to it. And I'll tell you why this is important. I remember seeing Bill Kazmaier, Larry Pacifico, you know, and those types of guys lifting. You know, that was really the height of the popularity and, you know, people knowing about the sport of powerlifting across the board because it was on TV. And, as I came up in the sport and then became a meet director, there's always going to be the guys that look like me at a powerlifting meet, you know. But what you don't have, you know, is kids and women in the sport. And for us to grow it back into prominence, I think for it to be widely accepted, you have to see our youth, and I'm not talking about little kids, I'm talking about, youth age level, 10 and up, and then women. And there's so many things about that, you know, that add to the popularity of the sport. And I remember a day where, you know, when you had two or three women lifters, that was a rarity. And at this particular meet, it being one of the two women's pro meets that the SPF has annually, there was 41 women lifters, and a lot of those with either elite or pro level totals. And what was amazing is just it was just over and over and over, the amount of weight lifted was just incredible. There was a couple of 600 plus pound squats,
wow.
Several deadlifts, 300, 400, 500 pounds, and some of these women were barely, 100 pounds. One that stands out, just because I'm a little familiar with her lifting just from her posting on Facebook, she's from Kentucky, Caitlin Trout, and I want to say she's a 123 class lifter, and lifted raw, squatted in the neighborhood of 350 pounds, benched in the high hundreds, and deadlifted, she deadlifted 360 pounds.
Wow.
But could be a bikini model, So, again, we're overcoming the stereotypes of what a woman has to look like in order for her to be strong. And, but it just incredible, absolutely incredible lifting. And the thing, and I said this at the same event, I judged this event last year, that, we're all about buying videos and DVDs and stuff like that, and these guys are squatting 1,000 pounds, and I'm one of those guys. I mean, I enjoy seeing that gigantic weight lifted. Well, I've also been around enough to know when someone is not only very, very strong, but they are very, very technically efficient. And, seeing some of these girls lift, you saw amazing, pinpoint technique. And so as a judge, I'm always learning by just simply watching, not only the mistakes that people make and what to avoid and how to teach and coach my lifters, but when you see something that when someone is very successful in how clean their lifts are and their technique, that comes from, majority of those girls are very, very, very proficient.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that's one area that women outpace the men, and that is being technically proficient as opposed to just muscling the weight. You're absolutely right. Hey, Rob, have you seen the guy who the high school student who benched 700 pounds a few weeks ago?
I have not. This is the first time hearing about it.
Have you heard about it, Wade?
I don't remember the kid's name. I know it was the Texas High School Powerlifting Association. He did it at that meet, and I saw the video, and an extremely clean lift. I mean, when I benched 700, it didn't look that good.
Right.
He didn't have, it didn't seem to be a shirt that was just so tight where it took him forever to touch. He took it down in about 3 or 4 seconds, got, paused it, got the press command, and it was a good steady press all the way to lockout. Very clean lift. I want to say he was 18 years old, and I mean, it's just astounding. And
it's inspiring.
I think he was in the 275 pound weight class, and it's just one of those things where the barriers that we've seen broken, it was the same way for Wes. When a teenager was hitting 500 in a shirt, it was just unheard of. And, to see this young man, lift this kind of weight and didn't seem to be too excited, just went up there, did his job and got up off the bench and on it, So, it is inspiring, and it's very gratifying to see.
Did you hear about Tiny Meeker? I got an email from somebody. I haven't read it completely, but Tiny Meeker apparently benched some sort of a world record recently.
It was, I want to say it was 1076. I saw the video, and I want to say this was a meet in Texas, but I could be absolutely wrong. But I saw the lift. The video angle was a little difficult to tell. but it looked like a pretty good lift. Tiny's been lifting, benching big weights for a number of years, and then he deadlifted. He deadlifted raw and beltless. And I mean, this guy is a self-proclaimed, you know, bench specialist. He, you know, I didn't even know he deadlifted, and he pulled 600 pounds, you know, yeah. So that's, you know, that's certainly respectable. But yeah, a 1076, I'm not sure if that's a world record or whatever the case may be. But that is certainly, I mean, a gigantic bench press.
Rob, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to leave you out of this, but these are some things.
But you know
what comes to mind, Wade? You know a guy that I know, only because I met him late in his career, and you probably knew him throughout his career. And we're talking about Dwayne Neely, who probably most people don't even know who that we're talking about when we say that. But Dwayne Neely was a powerlifter from Louisville, or one of the outskirts of Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
Who was a little guy,
yeah,
and had a 700-pound bench press. And I often wonder what would have happened had he really, really taken the sport as his primary goal. How strong could he have gotten?
I met Dwayne at the first meet I ever did, and he was benching, you know, in the low fives back then. And I want to say he was a 181, 198
yeah.
at that time.
Yeah.
And Dwayne lifted at several meets that I lifted on in early in my career. Then he lifted at several meets that where I was the meet director. And, I mean, just crazy strong. I mean, he was one of the bench pressers that, you know, when they were doing the meets, like the big bench on the river and stuff like that, you know, that all the top named guys were always concerned about Dwayne. I mean, you didn't get a lot of publicity or anything, but he was certainly someone that when it came to a bench meet that people were concerned about because he was so light and the guy could just press incredible, I mean, absolutely incredible weights.
And he was one of the most unassuming guys. You'd meet
yeah.
him at the, like, he was like shy, he was quiet,
yeah.
he would look off, he would come and he'd do his thing and then he'd leave and it wouldn't be
yeah.
like anybody, like I remember watching him bench 700 pounds at a, and he had been out of the game. Wasn't even training much anymore. And he showed up in Louisville for a promotion that Jeff Rui put on. And he benched 700 pounds,
mm-hmm.
and it was like, you know, I think he had his jeans and a lifting shirt on, and that was it.
Right.
it's like Wade said, you know, every day we are seeing what we thought was in prior impossible possible.
Yeah.
And it's going on with young people, it's going on with old people, and you know, it just goes to show you, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. It is possible, and you can do it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing.
I spoke at Laura and Shane Sweats. They did a seminar for the ladies the following day, helping them with training and answering questions. And one of the things that I told them, one of the gratifying things as a judge, as a coach, you know, and just being a fan of the sport, is watching the realization. You know, I told them everyone has their own 1,000-pound squat, whether that is to, you know, deadlift 300, bench 100, whatever the case may be. Everyone has that, you know, that mile marker, you know, milestone lift. And it's incredibly gratifying when I get to work with people or judge them or just simply watch them. When you see what they thought was either, you know, if not impossible, highly improbable, you know, become reality, you know, to see them achieve something that they once thought was not possible. And you're seeing it, you know, people have talked about powerlifting being, you know, like a backyard or underground sport, but it is growing and continues to grow. And with, you know, with the CrossFit folks, you know, crossing over into it, you're seeing more and more people exposed to it. And it's absolutely incredible, you know, the strength from, you know, little people, you know, to the biggest, you know, massive guys, the weights that are being lifted that people are becoming proficient at. 10 years ago, you know, you never saw a 700-pound bench press 10 years ago at a local meet. You know, and now, you know, if you're,
yeah, there's two or three guys that bench. I know, it's right. It's right.
Yeah, now, you know, it's not uncommon even at a local level meet to see someone squat in the 900 to 1,000-pound range.
You know, wow. I'm so inspired by the women, and I'll tell you why. Because I think it's so important for women to embrace strength and not think it's exclusively a man thing, because it's going to make them age better. They won't ever need Boniva. They won't, I mean, it's like the more women we get who powerlift, who still look like bikini models, the mm-hmm. more acceptance we'll get for women being strong. And that day will be the day that I will raise my hands in excitement, because we need strong women to understand it's okay to be strong, to look strong. You don't have to look like one of these waifish, starved models who's eating tissues, believe it or not. They eat tissues so that they don't have any calories in their stomach. I mean, women need to break the chains of the prison that they're in, where they have to look like they're emaciated, and embrace their strength, man. I love it. I really do. Listen, guys, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today and doing this. And I will be ordering pizza during the break, because I want to be big
and
strong. Great
to be with you guys.
All right. Take care, Rob. Take care, Wade.
Same here.
See you, boys.
NASA. 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 NASA.
Oh, I strike with the best. If you ain't feeling one or two, I respect. Back. Probably just forgot I've got a reason for my.
Calling all men. The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, Stimulant-Free Pre-Workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today. New from Rob Riggish, author of The Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes the Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplementation, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to the blueprintbulletin.com today. Everyone wants growth hormone because growth hormone works. Now Age Force is offering a buy one, get one free on their most popular transdermal patch. The Power Patch contains 25 milligrams of real somatropin per patch. It delivers real competent human growth hormone right to your bloodstream without the discomfort of injections. There's never been a better time to see what the Power Patch can do for you. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. This offer ends soon. Get your growth hormone the Age Force way. Power Patch. Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Right process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money. Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a one-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding.
Iron Mag Lab is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
I had some people post on the Superhuman Radio website that they couldn't figure out how to order the new anti-inflammatory stack from Life Extension Foundation. If you go to the Life Extension Foundation banner ad that is asking you to sign up for the free membership, at the very, very top of the page, you'll see something that says order now. Get 50% off this anti-inflammatory combination or something like that. You just click that, and it automatically deducts the reduces the price to the one that we spoke about on the air. So check it out. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad today and take advantage of this amazing anti-inflammatory stack. Now, we are joined by the man who's responsible for making your brain bigger every single day at subversity.com, the brilliant and talented Adele Moussa. How you doing, Adele?
I'm doing fine. Fortunately, my brain has not yet exploded. And finally, the weather even is... it looks like it's spring, and I'm feeling much better than the weeks before, I must admit.
Well, I actually thought of you several times, and I commented, and I invoked your name several times on the show yesterday when we were talking about melatonin and disease with Dr. Schoenhammer, and she said, and I had mentioned you so many times during the show that I felt that, you know, it's not appropriate for me to keep saying, well, Adele does that and Adele does this. But she talked about why light boxes are so good. And I almost said, well, Adele Moussa in Munster, Germany has one of those. He wakes up with one of those in the morning. But you do, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And I still do it now. But in a way, it's different to, you know, that I'm biking almost everywhere. And it really makes a huge difference if you're biking in the sun or if you have to wear a raincoat and have to wear thick clothes just to protect you from the cold. And I think this is part of the reason that I'm so grateful that finally spring is there.
You know, I actually, it's funny you say this. The studio is approximately 8 miles from my home and 11 miles from the gym. And obviously the gym is about 2 miles from my home, and Elisa has this beautiful mongoose bicycle hanging in the garage. And I said, I think I'm going to put air in the tires and start riding, to the gym and to the studio a few times a week. And it's not going to be easy because there's a couple really, really steep hills on the way to the studio, but I thought I could just downshift into a low gear and do it. And I think that within the next week or so, I'm going to dust off that bike, put air in the tires, and I'm going to start riding at least 3 days a week or as the weather permits. Because I'll tell you something. I got in the best shape that I had been in for a long time when I was living in Phoenix and I lost access to a car. And I had to walk to the gym, and it took me 40 minutes to get there. Then I would train, and then I had to walk home. Then I had to walk to the studio and walk home. And I was walking everywhere. And I even posted a blog post saying that I'm living a more European lifestyle. And I got, first of all, I got tan. And second of all, I got lean really fast. And I felt fantastic. So I'm going to take my own advice and put the car away for a while and start biking everywhere. I'm going to take a lesson from Adele Moussa here.
I think that's a pretty good idea. And actually, Adelfo posted a blog post today on his plan how you can get each ready, and it includes dietary advice and a detailed training program. And one thing I would add is to really keep an eye on this day-to-day light or so-called light physical activity, because as you've pointed out, even if you are biking somewhere, you have this frequent low-intensity exercise, which really gives your body the chance to burn off calories, whether you're dieting or not. And sometimes it really turns out to be sort of an interval workout, because in reality, you always have those hills. You have to climb those hills for a short time, or I don't know how many traffic lights on the way are, but I always have short sprints when I see the traffic light is close to going red, and I'm trying to get across before it's turning red. And so my way to work usually turns out to be an interval workout with at least 5 sprints and a couple of heavier episodes where I have to bike up a hill. And in the end, those activities, I always realize that when for whatever reason, I do not have this daily activity, I tend to feel, or I tend to see after weeks at least, that it's it's much more difficult for me to maintain my weight or to maintain the same degree of leanness, let's say it this way.
Do you have bicycle paths in Germany?
Yeah, we do, yeah.
See, the only concern I have is there are no bicycle lanes in my travels. And so the thing that concerns me is the downhill and the uphill, how I will affect traffic and how do I stay out of the way of traffic. But I'm going to do it. You know what? People need to just go around me. I go around bicyclists all the time. I give them the courtesy, and maybe I'm not the happiest about it, but you know what? I'm definitely going to do this. Okay, so let's move on. So yesterday we did this fantastic show with Dr. Schoenhammer, and we traversed so many different things, and you were shooting me studies about questions I was asking that she couldn't even answer. So you want to pick up where we left off a little bit on yesterday's show, correct?
Yeah, I think it really was an interesting show, and I would really suggest that everyone goes back and downloads the podcast and listens to it, because there was much to learn from it. And actually, the first study I've picked for today's Science Roundup is actually a sort of extension of what we've learned yesterday. It's a very recent study which was done on mice, and what scientists did basically is that they didn't switch off light at night for the rodents. So we all know that rodents don't have the same activity patterns as the human beings. But if you imagine you were living, or you were actually in the society we are living in, we have lights 24/7 around us.
Right.
And this is basically what the scientists mimicked with those mice. And what they found was that after 4 days already, the normal amplitude, that is the ups and downs in the circadian rhythm, already had declined by 44%. And the intriguing thing about this is that at the same time, the food intake had increased by 1/4, that is 26%, and the energy expenditure in spite of the increase in food intake had decreased by 13%. So that the result after 4 days only was a net weight gain of 2.4%. And the study continued, and after 14 days, the mice had already gained 5% body weight. So the only thing that changed was really the lighting condition. And this had so detrimental effects on the circadian rhythm of the animals that the disruption of this rhythm alone caused insulin resistance, overfeeding.
That's exciting.
And weight gain.
That's exciting. So that does answer the question that I was trying to pose yesterday, or at least alludes to an answer, whether or not the melatonin itself, whether the effects on insulin resistance are intrinsic or extrinsic, or corollary, to the relationship of melatonin. It looks like melatonin itself, by not being produced, affect weight gain. Is that and insulin resistance? Is that a fair assumption?
I would say no, because you would have to prove that by administering melatonin to the rodents at the right times and keep the levels steady. But I suspect that it's rather a corollary factor. Because what really disturbed the rhythm was the constant presence of light. And we know that we have receptors in our eyes which detect especially the blue light and try to synchronize our circadian rhythm. And the same is obviously true for mice. So I suppose that really what you pointed out in yesterday's show also, that just taking melatonin at the right times is probably not enough. Actually, I've looked back on another study which did investigate different means of using melatonin.
Right.
It's a study from 1988, and the authors provide some recommendations of how you can use melatonin to achieve phase advances or phase delays in your circadian rhythm. That is, to shift forwards or backwards. And for this purpose, this is obviously possible, but on the other hand, you still have to go to bed and to lie in the dark after you've taken your melatonin.
Right.
So for example, if you want to achieve a phase at once, that means if you want to make sure that you, or if you want to go to bed earlier in the days to come, you would have to take the melatonin before dusk in order to shift the rhythm forward. And on the other hand, if you want to lie, or if you're someone who's getting up too early, so to say, you would have to take the melatonin
later
at dawn and achieve the exact opposite. And by using melatonin and light therapies, like those lamps as I've been using lately, you can really shift your rhythm. And the scientists suggest that you do that in 15 minutes steps. And once you're comfortable with the new rhythm, you shift another 15 minutes. So this is really a constant progress, so to say. And I remember we've been talking about just that, in the context of the, what's it called in English, when you set the clock.
Jet lag. Oh, daylight savings time. We talked about it. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's a more sensible way to do it over the course of the weekend instead of the night before. Exactly.
Yeah. So in essence, this is exactly the same. And it's always a combination of the hormones and the light. But in the end, I suspect that the main function still is the light, as long as your system is not totally wrecked already.
Do you have any opinions on chronotypes? I posted that in the blog. You shared the study, the self-test from the University of Munich. Do you have any theories on or any opinions on the whole chronotype discussion?
Well, I guess in a way we are all the same. But still, there is certainly you certainly have a certain disposition for being an early bird, or rather the opposite. And I think if you feel that if you have 2 or 3 weeks off and realize that your body tells you to rise early, then this is the way to go. But obviously, our society often forces us, and our jobs, of course, often force us to comply to certain schedules. And therefore, I'm not really sure how much we can listen to all of our bodies. But what I really think is a problem is that school, for example, does not really take into account that puberty is a proven time in our lives where our usual pattern shifts. And we really are programmed to stay up late and get up late.
Right.
And I think I've even seen a study where the scientists speculated that the ability to learn, or the children's ability to learn, really suffers from having to be at school before 10 p.m.
Yeah,
10 a.m.
We talked about that. I think we talked about it on a science roundup after I had done an interview with a guest who talked about children who stay up too late to study end up seeing a drop in their performance results as opposed to the opposite.
Of course, yeah. But in this case, it's rather like when puberty hits you, you're programmed to roam around in the night to find your first partner. And this old instinct is still there. And this is probably, or this is at least what some scientists reason could be the underlying cause of this circadian shift. And in a way, it also shows you how tightly connected the whole system is, because this is a hormonal change which is not directly related to the circadian rhythm, but it has a feedback on the circadian rhythm. And on the other hand, we also know that, for example, when you're men with sleep disturbances have compromised sperm function, so and lower testosterone levels, so there are all those difficile feedback mechanisms, which is also why it's so difficult really to treat any of these problems which are related to the circadian rhythm. Also because you have one which is the central one, which is mainly regulated by light exposure, and where melatonin is your number one hormone, and you have also sort of a secondary clock, which is a peripheral clock, and it is regulated by food intake and also by what you eat.
Right.
And when you eat.
Right. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we got a question from a listener who is wondering what the relevance of rodent model studies present in human conditions. And so we're going to talk about that when we come back. Right, Adele?
Yeah, and it's actually a very good question.
Okay, so you're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup on Superhuman Radio, brought to you by Subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com, the single best blog to learn about health, nutrition, sexuality, anything that you're looking for. Adele is by far one of the most talented writers who combines his innate curiosity and intelligence with topics that interest everyone. Go to Subversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. We'll be right back.
You call your battlefield after each training engagement, you must recover. Introducing the most complete all-natural and organic recovery formula, AM Nutrition's Basic Training, formulated by a military veteran. Basic Training provides the ammunition your body needs to recover and continue the fight. No fake sugar or flavors, no GMOs, less than 1 milligram of sugar and soy per serving, with complete nutrition no other company provides. Arm yourself with the healthiest recovery formula on the market, the body's ammunition. AM Nutrition, join the nutritional revolution by going to MuscleAndNutrition.com. That's Muscle, AMNUTRITION.com.
Recover!
And Nutrition.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RGCell banner ad today.
Have you ever been let down by so-called nitric oxide muscle pump products before? Well, prepare to be shocked. Vengeance is like nothing you've ever tried before. Vengeance leverages several different scientifically proven technologies to deliver what some users say are painfully explosive pumps. If you are satisfied with nitric oxide products that make you wonder if they're working, move on. But if you want a muscle pump that you'll not only feel, but others will see, train with a vengeance. Go to xfmuscle.com today and get vengeance.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Electronic muscle stimulation is state-of-the-art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to the Subversity Science Roundup. Okay, so this is really a good question. Let me see who it was sent in by. I apologize for not having this sooner. Do you have the name of the person who sent this in? Well, I struggle to find.
We'll have to check it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll find it while we're talking about it. So it's a very good question. You know, what relevance do rat model studies have, or mouse model studies? It's sent by from Gabriel. I don't have a last name for Gabriel. It just says Gabriel. So thank you so much for sending in this question, Gabriel. You know, he says, I love the show and have been listening now for about 12 months from the west coast of Ireland, especially like the Elisa Profumo show, which obviously we call Casual Friday, and the Subversity Sniff Test. However, as Adele tends to predominantly speak to rodent trials, I'm wondering if you could ask him to address the new study below, as I've wondered now for a long time, what the heck is the relevance of mouse studies, and how does it affect the complex humans, really? I didn't look at the study yet. I did open it. So let's address the study in first. He says, why we should all be wary of science research. You know what? We talked about this study a long time ago. I tried to get this scientist on the show, I think.
I'm not quite sure, because basically the actual result of the study is not really significant or that much interesting. The main message of the study, or the main message Gabriel was hinting at, is actually that the scientists were quite surprised that the stuff they analyzed, or the processes they analyzed, produced a completely different genetic switches in human beings versus rodents. And in fact, he's obviously right that we have to be very cautious when it comes to rodent studies, in terms of saying, because in rodent study A, this and that happens, it is certain that another thing, that the same thing will happen in human beings. Now, the main reason I'm talking so often about rodent studies here is actually that most studies are still done in rodents. And when you think about it, it's actually it's a financial question, and it's oftentimes also a question of not willing to risk the lives of your subjects, or to really hurt them. Because in some situations, what they are doing to rodents is they have to make them sick first in order to test whether certain substance works to help them. And in other cases, you simply have the problem that many of the interesting analyses will require much more than a simple muscle biopsy. So you would have to have someone to agree to be killed in the name of science,
right,
in order to examine him completely. For example, very often we see those studies where they feed rodents a certain diet and or supplement, or both, and then they analyze the hepatic fat content, that is, how much fat accumulated in the liver. And in a rodent, it's quite nice, because at the end of the study, the rodent is euthanized, and then they can actually cut the liver out of the poor critter and analyze it in all detail. And obviously, you cannot do this with the human being. So we really have to rely on those studies. On the other hand, I must applaud Gabriel to point that out, because I'm also guilty of not pointing out often enough that in essence, many of the results we are talking about here are very preliminary, in as much as they really need confirmation in human study. And I want to give you a very popular example. Everybody has probably heard about the rodent studies, which produced really intriguing results with CLA, conjugated linoleic acid, and it's still hailed as a fat loss wonder on the basis of those rodent studies. But if you look at the human literature, first of all, the effect sizes, if there were any, are much smaller, and second of all, in many, or at least in, I would say, in a quarter of the studies, there were no real fat loss effects with the supplementation of CLA. So this could be one of the cases where certain substance switches different genes in rodents than in humans. And it turns out that the results we've derived from our rodent study won't really translate into human studies.
Well, this actually was discussed. Something was discussed on the show recently. I want to say it was a week or two ago, where one of the scientists I had on the show, oh, I remember what it was. Dr. Rangham, who came on and talked about catching fire when we started cooking our food. And he pointed out that while, what is it called? Acrylamide, which accumulates in starchy foods like potatoes when they're high heat fried, seems to be carcinogenic in rats. It does not appear to be carcinogenic in humans. Now, I didn't challenge him and say, well, you know, what study, you know, but later on, I communicated with him and he sent me a paper. And, apparently it doesn't do the same thing in humans that we thought it would, that caused all the fervor, that made, California make McDonald's put, on the side of their French fry boxes that these may be carcinogenic. So,
yeah,
this is another example. So, okay. So let's talk about this for a second, Adele. So what studies can we absolutely ignore when they're done? Or I apologize. What studies can we reduce the gravity of importance on when they're done in rodent models, as they apply to humans? For instance, I think you pointed out in an email to me that, when we look at, dietary issues, you know, humans have free choice. We eat differently. We combine foods. And then when they do these studies in these little rats and little mice, you know, they're subjected to have to eat this food, this chow, over and over and over again. And so subsequently, the end result may not, be conveyed to human models. What research can we absolutely say, look, we must take these with a grain of salt in this area here when they're done on rats first?
Yeah, well, you're right. Everything that has a psychological factor or where certain factors are contributing, for example, all those studies are obviously, you cannot really do them in rodents. And I'm always very skeptical when I see a study that shows that supplement X or drug X is effective as an antidepressant and they do this in rodents. I have no idea how you, there are tests like hanging the rat up with the tail. From whatever, and looking at how it reacts, which is supposed to be a test for depression, but I'm really skeptical about the validity of these results.
Yeah. How do you really evaluate depression in a rat? You know what I mean? Well, wait a minute. He doesn't lick his private parts a day or two in a row. I mean, what analysis can you provide that says this rat is depressed?
Yeah, there are certain markers and certain tests, and they are said to be accurate, but I still have my doubts. And we all know how easy, how complex actually the human psyche is, and therefore I'm really not sure how much you can do with that. And aside from those very complex things, I think that people also underestimate minor differences, and I know that. That one of the favorite topics, if I look at the page we use on Subversity, I know that everything concerning fat loss is obviously always very intriguing for people. And especially if there is something that holds the promise of easy fat loss, by just taking a pill. And one of the reasons that not just GLA, but even way, way more other, promising supplements turned out to be real monsters in human beings is that rodents, react very differently to everything that is thermogenic. You can easily say that those effects are at least way more pronounced in rodents, and in many cases they are almost exclusive. That means many of the substances which can produce profound weight loss in rodents by thermogenic effects don't really work in human beings. Because even if you administered them in levels where a human would already get a cardiovascular issues, the thermogenic effect would still be at least 10 or 100 times lower than in a rodent. And this is something people really have to keep in mind when they're looking at those studies. And another thing that often gives me a headache is I do it every time when I post a study like this, but only because I know that otherwise 5 minutes after I've posted the study or my article on the study, someone will write in the comment area what a human being would have to take to achieve the same effects. And there are standardized calculations, which are based on the body weight and on the body surface of the animals, by which you can estimate the so-called human equivalent dosage. But this is actually a pretty hilarious concept, because it really assumes that for every compound, you would have the exact same equation that yields the equivalent amount. And in essence, those human equivalent dosages have rather been developed as a means to conduct studies where you don't really subject the participants to danger, because the scientists want to know, okay, our rodents had the LD50, it's called the lethal doses 50.
Right.
Which means that 50% of the animals died. This is one of the classic markers of toxicity. And usually you do those safety studies in rodents, and then you calculate a human equivalent dosage and subtract, I don't know how many percent from that, where you can be really, really sure that nothing bad will happen to the participants of the study. And this is actually where those equivalent dosages are used. So it's not like we know exactly what's the optimal dosage. For that, you will really have to do the follow-up studies in humans. And this brings us back to what we've said before, that in essence, you could say that rodent studies are pretty much like epidemiological studies, more or less means of hypothesis formation,
right,
for follow-up studies in human beings. And it's a difficult business to decide which studies really will turn out to, or which results really will turn out to translate to humans and which won't. And I personally, for example, always like pig studies done in pigs, because in the end, pigs are omnivores. They're eating basically everything, and they are also larger animals than rodents, and they actually have more in common with us than rodents.
Right.
So, but even studies done in pigs are not 100% accurate in terms of interpretability with respect to human beings.
Right. But I agree. I think pigs are a better choice. Because they share a lot of similarities organ-wise and systemically with humans. So that would be a better choice to really see. But you don't see many going from rat model studies to pigs. They go right from rat model studies to eventually human studies. So
yeah, pigs are really expensive.
Yeah,
not because the pig is so expensive, but you have to host it somewhere. And if you have trained pigs,
imagine a study that has 300 rats, right? So they can keep all 300 rats in a tiny little room by stacking the cages. Now imagine a study that has 300 pigs. You need a farm.
Yeah. So you do it right in the zoo.
Yeah, there you go. You're right. You know what? I wasn't going to take a break. I was going to go right into the next subject, but I want to take a break now because I want to go into this next subject. I want to clear our mental palates, because when we come back, we're going to talk about the forks over knives theory that vegans are healthier, and somehow the vegan lifestyle, you know, when you talk to people who are vegans, they're like, no, this is the way to live longer, this is a healthy lifestyle. We're going to talk about a study that may shed some light on whether they're right or not. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup with Adele Moussa, brought to you by Subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
AnaboliCMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnaboliCMinds.com today and get into the action. AnaboliCMinds.com. Learn, teach,
leave.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrian C. Altrian C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrian delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to AltrianC.com. That's AltrianC.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to AltriantC.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altriant C. 21st Century Vitamin C.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RG Cell banner ad today.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
By the way, Gabriel's last name is McSharry, who listens to the show from the west coast of Ireland and submitted that question. Thank you so much, Gabriel, for doing that. Okay, so if you listen to the Forks Over Knives group, they'll tell you that living the vegan lifestyle is the way to live longer and be healthier. Many vegans claim they're healthier. They don't look it to me, but they claim they are. What do you think, Adele? What new research do we have to look at?
Well, before I get into the details on this particular study, I want to briefly mention another study I posted earlier on the Supplement's Facebook page today, which reports a twofold increase in risk of heart disease in vegans. And of course, this is again just based on markers of heart disease. And in this case, the two are homocysteine and vitamin B12. And actually, they are closely related because vegans usually don't get enough vitamin B12. They also don't get enough choline and other cofactors which are needed to eliminate the homocysteine because they don't eat meat and they many of them even don't eat eggs. So that the risk really increases for heart disease, and this is a matter of fact. You cannot just simply ignore. So it is not right that eating or that a vegan diet is in and out of itself healthier than a diet which includes meat, because you really miss out on many of the good nutrients in meat. And we all know that if you look at the epidemiological studies, meat is only bad in a certain context, which is as processed meat. And whenever the scientists really check for red meat or meat in general and included data on the way it was processed, then no processed or less processed meat usually didn't change the outcomes in terms of longevity, in terms of cancer, or in terms of heart disease, or even positive effects on it. And in this is actually in exactly in line with this particular study, which says that due to the nutrient deficiencies in the vegan lifestyle brings with it, they are actually at a higher risk of developing heart disease. And now you often have the proponents of vegan lifestyle cite other epidemiological studies where people who are vegetarians or even vegans have higher life expectancy. And this is actually where this ties in with what we said before, because a human being and a human life is nothing you can simulate accurately with a rodent. And the study from Trinidad and Tobago recently questioned vegans in the United States, or a group of scientists working in Trinidad and Tobago questioned vegans in the United States, and they asked them, first of all, why the vegans would adhere to a vegan lifestyle.
Right.
And interestingly enough, the number one answer they received was health. So 47% of them chose the vegan lifestyle because they felt that it would be good for their health. And then they analyzed cofactors or correlates of being a vegan. And interestingly, those were regular exercise, normal BMI, minimal alcohol consumption, no smoking, frequent consumption of vegetables and nut grains, healthy choices on meal types, healthy cooking methods, and low-fat product consumption, and an adequate intake for most protective nutrients when compared to reference values. So if we look at what we have here, then expect for not eating meat, vegans are doing everything really right. So compared to the average human being, to the average omnivore who's doing almost everything wrong, they will of course have a much higher life expectancy and won't get sick that easily because they are making so much right. And this goes to show you that whenever you pick out one of those factors and don't really try to include the other ones and look what correlates there are to this specific diet, for example, or to this specific way of training also, then you could be completely missing the boat.
Right. Yeah. And this is part of the problem too. Okay, so now let's move on to the next study with your permission, unless you want to talk about anything else about being vegan, because it's...
No, actually not, no.
Okay. So, activity-related energy expenditure, appetite and energy intake, potential implications for weight management. What does this study tell us, and is it true?
Well, actually, this study, many people probably think that that energy intake is nothing really important, and in the end... when you're dieting and you're really controlling your diet intake, it may not be that important whether you're hungry or not. But first of all, the main determinant of dietary success is actually, or it has been shown that one of the main determinants is whether you're hungry all the time or not. And there are two factors playing a role here, because the first one is that when you're hungry, you're obviously more prone to cheat on your diet. But on the other hand, when you're hungry, this also means that your body is not producing those satiety hormones, of which we know now that they also regulate your metabolism. And being hungry and not producing satiety hormones means, on the other hand, downregulating the energy expenditure. And in this recent study, they actually investigated the effects of general activity levels on the dietary intake and also on the appetite ratings. And what they found was actually quite interesting, because it really pertains to what we, or it really tailors to what we've been talking about on previous shows, that doing nothing is not a good idea, but that doing more and more and more to lose weight can be counterproductive.
Right.
Because the study showed quite conclusively that in both men and women, yet a little more pronounced, the effects were a little more pronounced in men, the people with a medium activity level were the ones who had the best satiety effect from a meal, and they actually also consumed the least calories. That means that those who sat around all day were hungrier and ate more than those who were mediumly active. And in the end, when you look at the outcomes and the weight, the scientists also track the weight changes of the subjects, you also see that this really pans out over months. That means the people who were really active, who really tried to exercise as much as possible, they didn't have the best weight changes. But those who were mediumly active, those were the ones who felt satiated, who really did not overeat, and who ended up losing the most significant amount of weight.
Well, you know, and obviously, this is the old adage, you know, everything in moderation, and it's true. I mean, everything in moderation. We know that when we train too hard, we become hungrier and hungrier, and there's lots of research that shows that when people overtrain, they compensate, even though they think they may be dieting. When allowed to eat unrestricted, they compensate. The body demands more calories. So there's a happy medium. Sometimes that happy medium can be achieved by training hard for a couple days, all out in beast mode, and taking 2 days off, you know, 2 days on, 2 days off, 2 days on, 3 days off, you know, 1 day on, 1 day on, 2 days off. Modulating the stress on the body clearly plays a role on your progress. More is not better. In the case of training intensity and frequency, in my opinion,
yeah, and you really shouldn't neglect the effect. Relatively light work you wouldn't even consider training has on your energy expenditure and also on your appetite ratings. So what we've been talking about before, the biking to the work, for example, would be one of those things that if you do it consistently, is worth much more than for high intensity workouts per week, because it does not really entail this the risk of overtaxing the system while providing all sorts of benefits. And I'm not quite sure. I've been searching for that all along, but there are only very few studies investigating or directly comparing exercise inside and outside. And now one, which is, I think, 5 or 6 years old already, where they compared the effects of aerobic exercise, the exact same type of exercise done indoors and outdoors. And interestingly enough, the fat loss effects, this was in a diet context in women, I think postmenopausal women in that case, if I'm recalling it correctly, the outdoor exercise, although the machines they used said that the women burned the exact same amount of calories or energy. The outdoor exercise was still much more effective in terms of fat loss than the indoor variant. And I think this tells you something about being indoors all the time and driving everywhere, so leaving just your car in order to hop into the next building. Versus going doing a bicycle ride or just walking from place A to place B.
Okay, I want to take on this next subject before we take a last commercial break, and this is an important one because, as a former obese person, I remember how my mood affected my desire to eat and my ability to become or to relinquish control on eating. And you really do; it's almost like a frenzy. But this one is about adolescent girls. Let's talk about that, Adele.
Yeah, I think maybe they are known to be a little moody, and in essence, it's still the same for everyone. I believe that our mood really has a significant effect on on eating or on our eating habits. And in this particular study, the scientists were able to show that when the subjects appeared at the laboratory before a meal where they were able to choose as much or how much they wanted to eat on themselves, a negative mood on the day of the test correlated or showed a very high correlation with not only increased food intake, but also with the feeling of really losing control and eating
right.
and eating and eating.
And I know that feeling. You know what? It's a manic feeling. You're eating and you know that you're overeating and you know that it's you're kind of getting swept away and you're shoving food in your mouth. I mean, I've been there. I've done it. I know what it's like. And you know that you can stop and you know that you should stop, but this sense of actually embracing the loss of control and kind of laughing to yourself while you're doing it. There's a good feeling and a bad feeling about it simultaneously.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, at the end of the of the meal, all of the girls felt that their negative effect decreased, but it did not depend on how much they were eating. So even in this case, eating more does not really help more. And I think when we are now taking a commercial break, we will come back and talk about the opposite effect, which is quite intriguing because there are quite intriguing similarities between the negative effect and being happy and eating.
Right, right. Okay, so let's talk about that. That's the second one. I want to address this if it's okay. Can we address it first before we take the break?
Okay, of course. Because this is actually the complementary study where the scientists tried to find out what would happen when the participants are happy. And you would probably expect that when you're happy, you're not eating as much. But interestingly enough, there was not this loss of control, but there was still a high correlation with higher intakes for the happy subjects. So in another word, this psychological effect on eating is so huge that whenever you're doing a rodent study like this, you would also have to question the rodents in advance whenever you feed them, whether they are happy or not.
Right.
Otherwise, it's pretty difficult to say how accurate the results will be for human beings. So if you are happy, for example, you could easily overeat on whatever you really don't like, just because you need the hedonic effect, or the hedonic effect is still very pronounced, but in a neutral state, so to say, you would eat much less of the same food because you do not feel the same reward.
And this is really an important discussion, and we are going to take a break right now, but we're going to kind of stay with this with the next two discussions about the psychology of overeating, because I think this is really intriguing. And I think there's another aspect to this that has never really been studied, but I suspect, and I don't want to get real metaphysical and touchy-feely here, but I suspect that the mood that you're in while you're eating affects how that food is handled in partitioning, what it becomes, whether it feeds fat more than muscle, and so on. And I know that people are probably thinking, okay, Carl, you really lost me now. But the research has not been done. Don't discount. If you're stressed out and feeling guilty about the food you're eating, I predict your body does something different with it than if you just trained and you're going, man, I need this food to build muscle. So let's come back and talk more about the psychology of overeating. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup, brought to you by the wonderful and amazing website, Subversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
How do you avoid
protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest protein bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit ironmaglabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinus Stain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultra Male RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at ironmaglabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre-, intra-, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Everyone wants growth hormone because growth hormone works. Now AgeForce is offering a buy one, get one free on their most popular transdermal patch. The Power Patch contains 25 milligrams of real somatropin per patch. It delivers real, competent human growth hormone right to your bloodstream without the discomfort of injections. There's never been a better time to see what the Power Patch can do for you. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today. This offer ends soon. Get your growth hormone the H-Force way. Power Patch.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to AltrientC.com. That's AltrientC.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to AltrientC.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrient C. 21st century vitamin C.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. So, we've talked about mindfulness on this show over the years and how mindfulness plays a large role in so many different things. But what about mindfulness while you're eating? We've heard lots of so-called diet gurus saying that, you know, if you're not mindful of what you're eating, you get no satisfaction from the meal. So, how does mindful eating affect serving size and so on? We have actually a study on humans this time, right?
Yeah, of course. I think it would be difficult to do this in rodents. And the twist to this particular study is actually that it was rather a study in general mindfulness and not just the mindful eating. So someone who's really thinking about what he's doing and not just living along, so to say, is usually, or this is the first result of the study, is usually also someone who's a mindful eater. And interestingly enough, this mindful eating has a most significant effect on the estimated intake of very energetically dense foods and on the portion sizes of these dense foods. So somebody who's really thinking about what he's eating will deliberately control his intake of those foods, also because he gives his body maybe the chance to really feel that what he's just eating is actually energetically dense. Because we all know that in the end, our bodies are able to sense how much energy we consume. The problem is just that we have developed certain foods where there is a huge disconnect between the way they taste and the actual energetic content. On the other hand, we have this on both sides of the divide. We have foods that taste as if they were really calorically dense and have almost no calories, and we have foods which are actually very calorically dense and may not even taste like this. And so we cannot rely on this sense, and therefore more and more people are relying mostly on portion sizes in order to control their dietary intake. And this is actually a very interesting topic, because scientists have also shown quite recently that when you give children, or you provide children with adult plates.
Right. So by adult plates, you mean full-size, normal-size dishes and plates.
Yeah.
As opposed to small, exactly, child-sized dishes and plates, right?
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Then in this case, they will almost always take avail themselves of a portion that would be adequate for an adult, because they know the image, or they remember the image of how the food should look on the plate, and they fill it up until it looks okay. And now you would say, well, it doesn't really matter because they are children and they really can't eat that. But interestingly enough, of those double per portions, the children really ate 50% of the additional load.
Mm.
When it's on the plate, they will eat it. And now you can extend that to a more general context, and all those super-sized meals and the always increasing serving sizes, because we don't really control our food by tasting like, or by tasting, oh, this is so sweet, and oh, I'm not satisfied, and we don't practice mindful eating. We really have to rely on those serving sizes. And this is not just true in one direction. This means it's not always better to have those small serving sizes, but also in the other direction, as another recent study showed, that especially in people who have weight problems, they are particularly prone to pick those single packages where you have those 200 kilocalorie packs.
Yeah, they're so popular here in the United States. Everything has a little label on it that says only 100 calories. So people go, oh, this is, I can have this. This is just 100 calories. But do they stop there, Adele?
Unfortunately, they don't. No. And interestingly enough, the study showed that the when you don't really consider what you're doing, so you're not thinking about whether you're eating too much or not, then in this particular study, they had the condition they called not activated and activated. In the one study, they basically told the participants, practice mindful eating. And in the other study, they told them, just eat away, so to say. And in the just eat away condition, they ate almost the same amount of both, of the large packages or the small packages.
Right.
In absolute terms.
Yeah, because let's face it, when the average person looks at 100 calorie package of, I don't know, pick one of these things. You get them on the airlines all the time. They don't say to themselves, oh, I'm going to eat that. They go, oh, it's only 100 calories. I can have three. That's what they say.
Yeah, and that the interesting thing is that this happened in the activated trial. So when they told the participants, watch out, don't eat too much, practice mindful eating, then it turned out that the overall consumption of the food that was served was in the small serving size group more than double the amount of the large size serving size group, which means that they just opened one of those 100 kilocalorie packets after the other and ate it instead of having a huge bowl of ice cream, for example, before them and taking one spoon and another spoon and then saying, oh, I've already eaten three spoons. Well, two, and now I'm satisfied. If you had as a replacement a bucket, a buckload of those small dummy ice cream size packets, they would really eat more. And so in the end, these strategies really don't work. And interestingly enough, they work the least for those people who already have problems with controlling their food intake because they are so-called hedonic eaters.
Right.
That is, people who are eating for the satisfying pleasure they feel when they're
And think about it. Think about what these little portion control sizes do for the hedonic eater. They disconnect guilt. So the person goes, oh, this is only 100 calories, and they eat it. And then they think, oh, you know what? It was only 100 calories. I can have a second one, and they eat it. And then they think, oh, I'm just going to have three, and then I'm going to stop, and I'll alter what I eat later today. And then they eat it. And so that whole process of just looking at it on the face value of 100 calories each time gives them absolution. It allows them to disconnect with the guilt that they would normally feel for overeating, because they did it in small portions. Plus, they're not using math. When you keep a food diary and you add up and you go, oh my God, I only have 400 calories left to eat today, that goes out the window with the guy or gal who's going, well, this is only 100 calories. It's like somebody who doesn't balance their checkbook, right? So they've been writing checks all month long and in small amounts. And at the end of the month, they find out, oh my God, I'm overdrawn, because they're not tallying at the end of the day or at the end of the week and going, wow, I have to stay in this zone. That would make the difference. But the person who gravitates towards those 100 calorie sizes is actually gravitating to it, in my humble opinion, because it absolves them of guilt and control. They go, oh, it's only 100 calories. Oh, it's only 100 calories 8 times over the day.
Yeah, and guess what? I mean, the food industry wouldn't produce those if they couldn't sell much more.
Exactly.
And they sell more in quantitative terms, and they sell it for much more money, because if you buy the same amount of ice cream either packaged in very small packages or as a huge bowl, you pay much more for the small packages.
For the individual packaging, because you're paying for the packaging. And you know what? It's interesting that you say something, because you can bet, I'll bet you $1,000 that when the companies that came out with the 100 calorie package size, if they thought that their sales were going to drop the next quarter as a result of making people more accountable, they would have never introduced that. They probably ran focus groups and said, holy mackerel, guess what? People eat twice as much when they look at it as 100 calories at a time. This is going to be great for us. That's what they did. They wouldn't create a product that's going to make their sales drop by 50% the next quarter.
They probably did exactly the same thing as the scientists here, because you really described pretty precisely what happened. When the small packages, they just switch off not just the guilt, but also the ability to really keep track, or the willingness and the ability to keep track of what you're eating, because it's just 100 calories, and or it's just this small package, can't be so bad. And just another one of them. And just another one. And at the same time, you see the producer with the dollar signs already in his eyes.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. But anyway, we're coming towards the end of the show, Adele. Is there anything else we want to talk about in order to crystallize or summarize this the psychology of overeating?
Well, I think that for the average human being who's not really the hedonic eater, one of the things is you should keep in mind is what would happen if today you you did not eat the same stuff you eat every day, and you wouldn't eat the same portion sizes. Because what I think often happens when somebody totally changes his or her diet, part of the success is simply that he or she also has to revise the portion sizes, and therefore suddenly is feeling satiated much earlier. I even notice that myself when I'm eating out and when I'm eating at a restaurant you get the food not all at once but in several
courses, in several courses.
Yeah, in several courses, of course. You in the really expensive restaurants, you get. Actually, if you had this all on one plate, you would say, I'm never getting satiated from this. But if you're getting one plate, one of those tiny plates with a really little amount of food on it, and then the next and the next and the next, you think, boy, I've been eating so much, I'm so full, I can't eat another course. If you had it in one course, you would have complained with the cook that you are not satisfied.
Right, right. And you know what? If somebody is sincere about breaking the psychology of overeating pattern, it's very simple. You just need to start tallying your calories every day and making yourself accountable. Accountability will help you break the pattern. Because when I've been using my Fitness Pal. I jokingly call it my Fatness Pal. And I went on the website and adjusted the macronutrient ratios for what I wanted, thanks to a listener who told me I could do that. 50-30-20, protein, carbs, fat. And by entering this in every single day, it makes me accountable. So even if I have something that I shouldn't have, it still gets figured in, and it removes something I should have had. And I'm not going to eat more that day than I'm supposed to do. Accountability will help you if you are a psychological eater. But you know what? A lot of psychological eaters don't want to be accountable. They want to eat what they want to eat. And that is the big challenge. That's the big challenge.
Another trick you can really use is to go shopping just once a week. And you plan before what you want to be eating in the week, or you just estimate about how much your energy intake in the week should be. And once you've realized that after 2 days there's almost nothing left, you really could come to think about how much you're eating and whether you shouldn't be more mindful with your eating.
Yeah.
Because in these days I would just go briefly over to the supermarket and get another package. And if you really restrict yourself to going shopping just once a week and buy all the stuff that does not have to be bought fresh on a daily basis, then you will realize how much you actually consume. If you're buying your food every day, and also if you're picking on based on today, I feel like eating whatever, and you always pick only what you really desire on this very day, then you're really in a great, you have a much higher chance of overeating.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Adele, I want to thank you as usual for all the hard work you put into Subversity Science Roundup. Please visit subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com. Also want to thank Coach Wade Johnson and Rob Regish for the first hour roundtable discussion on strength and hypertrophy. The whole show is about diet today. How do you like that? Well, that's not true. But we did talk a lot about nutrition. Hope you got something good from it. Tomorrow is Friday, which means that we will be performing Casual Friday with the lovely and talented Elisa Profumo. Thank you for listening. As always, if it wasn't for you, I would just be talking to myself. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good. The following